Good morning and happy Thanksgiving. Welcome to Seeing with the Eyes of Love. And good morning, Sherry.
Good morning.
Okay, shall I jump right in?
Yes, please. Do you have a quote for us this morning?
Yes, I do.
All right.
Make me sweet again. Fragrant and fresh and wild, thankful for any small event. Rumi. Make me sweet again, fragrant and fresh and wild, thankful for any small event.
Wow. Thankful for any small event.
Yeah. You know, it's
for a lot of us. Go ahead.
No. Go ahead.
Well, it just occurred to me whenever I encounter that, and I confess that's one that's on my bulletin board. So it's pretty much a part of my life all the time. But whenever I attend to it, it occurs to me that it's been a lot of years since that was an automatic orientation to life, and it takes a lot of practice to have that as an orientation to life.
Yes. So if I'm with you, it's that used to be our orientation to life,
right? When we were little people.
Kids.
Every day, you know, the worst thing in the world is to have to go to bed at night and miss out on all the fun and excitement. And the most exciting thing in the world is to wake up and get to go again.
Yes.
And then somehow over time.
Well, and it's sort of what we're looking at in the broadest sense of the word, that is the return that we're all practicing, no matter what's happening. That sweetness, that wildness, that freshness is
that
something
gratitude.
That always, yeah, that's always there, and gratitude is our path to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's so fun because I had an experience of that yesterday where I saw a bird I had never seen before, ever in my whole life. And in that moment, that was that sensation of wonder and that sense of innocent delight. I mean, I can't describe it except through that quote, which is, I have never seen this form of life before.
Uh-huh.
And that's the wonder with which we could be in every moment. Because if we're in that conversation, we're not present to the wonder in every moment.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And exactly so. And to take it to its most difficult to comprehend or to experience extreme, when we are present, every bird is a bird we've never seen before.
Absolutely.
Every tree
true.
Is a tree we've never seen before. Every cloud is a cloud. Right? And we actually have an experience of that. And of course the truly amazing application is each time we see a human being, we're seeing that human being for the first time. And which, you know, is easy with strangers, trickier with those with whom we are close. Those are the people we are most likely to stop seeing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so this sort of quote is pointing us to that place of, let's not let that attitude of abstraction, right, which is what conditioned mind is, prevent us from being present to everything that we can be present to, which is sweet, which is the movement into the lens that I wear is the prayer for today, right?
Mm-hmm.
The lens of sweetness.
Yes.
And, yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well. Here's our first caller.
All right. Good. Thank you.
You're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Monica from Oakland.
Hey, Monica.
Hey, Monica.
time. Well, first, I want to say thank you both for being here today and for doing the show and answering the call to help out during this time. Mm.
Turbulent time?
Yeah, I'm really feeling turbulent. That's a good word.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess so many, I haven't listened to every show, but every show has been that I have listened to has just been so helpful, and little pieces of what you guys are sharing has just been really useful. And one, which I can't remember now, but were the quotes, the Gandhi and Martin Luther King quotes from Tuesday. And also one thing, the very first show that I listened to, and I think, Sherry, you said nothing's changed. It feels like it's changed because now people are feeling more personal about it, but nothing has really changed because the world has always been how it is.
We feel, some of us feel more affected, right?
Right.
It's more what has been other people's reality is now more real for us.
Right. And obviously I'm experiencing that like everyone, but really I'm feeling more fear for people that I care about. And I don't think I'm afraid for me personally, except for like how I experience the world is different, I guess.
Yes.
And then like after a lot of emotions and a lot of fear and anger and disbelief and whatever, I guess the question that it came to me on Tuesday when I was listening to the call is how does this become a call to action, and how do I, as a person of privilege, contribute to equity in the world? Like without, and right now I'm just in the self-hate of being paralyzed by it and like seeing things, you know, that you can't unsee, and feeling just so many things. But also that another thing that you said is just how you can get all outraged and then just go, like, normalize it and go back to being asleep. And I am someone who has been working in work of racial justice for the past few years, so I'm not, like, suddenly wanting to go to action, but I'm wanting to step up action. And anyway, all of that, how to do it with love, how to do it with open-heartedness, and how to just mostly get out of the place of just feeling stuck with it all right now.
Yeah. And so, Monica, let me ask you this. Is part of the information that's coming to you, the self-hating information, does it have to do with degrees? And what I mean by that is information that a lot of us get from self-hate is that no matter what we're doing, it's not enough. That you should be doing something really big. You know, if you're not Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., or if you're not Mother Teresa, or if you're not, then it doesn't count.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I'm sure that's in there, but it's really about whiteness, I think, and it's about, like, I know for a long time I was angry about racial injustice, but there's this white guilt that kept me, and I think keeps people from action, you know, and so that was getting out of this idea that it's somehow my fault that we live in a racist world, and that, you know, that was a big step for me because that did allow me to be present to what's happening now and move forward. But I think it's about like an equity lens of like, so for example, there's a march on Washington the day after the inauguration, and it's a women's march, but everyone's invited, but it's organized by women. And
why not the day before?
That's a good question. So the thing is that all around me, I've had people very easily go, I'm going to go. So, and people of different races, but mostly white women and women who are of class privilege who can just buy a ticket. And, you know, the hotels are like, you know, of course, 15 times more than normal. It's just ridiculous, right? So I start, my self-hate is like, well, if I go, I'm not the person who should be there. People of color need to be there, women who can't necessarily be there. It's, if we just, all the white women keep showing up and make the same mistakes as the women's movement made in the 60s, that it was a white women's movement. So how do I participate? How do I use my privilege to participate and bring equity?
Well, if I may, Monica, if I may make an observation here.
Uh-huh.
When you listen to this, which I hope you will, I hope that you will hear that what's happening to you right now is the process that we all get tripped up in that has us where we are.
Yes.
That what we do is go up into conditioned mind to try to figure out, in opposition to, but we could say in relationship with, egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate. It's kind of like a dialogue or a debate with the voices of egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate. And in that, we're going to figure out what we should do.
Right. And I know that. I sense that, and I can't stop. Or
yes.
I can't sit. I try to sit. I'm so distracted. I'm just really, I guess, in that process right now, and I do see it as a process, and I do know that how I personally can move forward will come if I get centered.
Which is, as you know, why there's such an intense effort to keep you from getting focused.
Yeah. Right.
Keep you from getting present. And so when you ask, what can we do? What can we do as individuals? I would say that's the answer. And it's always the answer.
Yeah.
Get centered. Get
yeah.
present. Get here and see here what you're called to do. And
yeah.
and that's been the answer for us all along. And whether we're distracted by what's going on at work or what the neighbors are doing or what's going on in my relationship or what's happening with the kids or what's happening with the stock market or what's the latest, whatever it is, that is going on in conditioned mind that I'm distracted by, that distraction is keeping me from getting back here where life can use me.
Right. Yeah, it's really good to hear that. I had glimpses of remembering that, but it's just I'm so caught up in it that I can't.
Yes, and
you know.
Yes, oh, I do know. And the thing about it that I'm so grateful you're saying all this because I think it's true for all of us. We all know this place where even if I realize that as a privileged white person, I am probably safer in any danger. Currently, as the world is today, I'm safer in any danger than just about anybody else. Okay? That's the way it is. So if I make the plight of those less fortunate than I am about me,
right. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm taking it there.
And we have to really appreciate the irony of it. And also, I think we have to take a moment to go something along the line, deeply spiritual, along the lines of, wow. To get, to be able to see so up close and personal just how fiendishly, diabolically clever that system of egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate is, that it is able to use against us our goodness.
Yeah.
It's able to to use the deep love in our hearts to control us and further its agenda.
Yeah. The status quo.
Yes. Or worse.
Well, I mean, I can really see that as you're speaking. It's just like it's winning. Like I was, before I got on the call, I was like, it's winning, ego. This is winning right now because it's keeping me from doing anything. You know, it's just keeping me in that loop, and that is how everything stays the way that it is.
That's
or
right.
It's worse.
That's right. So supposedly, as you know, 2,500 years ago, the Buddha said society is insane.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, 2,500 years later, we're proving it, right?
Right.
I talk to people since I learned about awareness practice that we live in an egocentric, karmically conditioned, self-hating society. Now, society is not the cause of me. I'm the cause of society, right? It's all of us living in that place together, whether we consider ourselves the good people, and who doesn't,
right?
One side considers themselves the good people and finds the other side completely scary, and then you go over there, and they feel exactly the same way. They are the good people, and the other side is completely terrifying.
Right.
And so there we are in a dualistic, egocentric, self-hating, pitched battle that only, as you point out, only ego is winning.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. I can see it.
Yes. Yes. So this is a brief foray, but right now I'm reading a book, and it takes place in England, London, in the early to middle 1700s. And children, white children, are hanged for stealing a loaf of bread. Children who are starving are hanged for stealing a loaf of bread. Now, you see, it's never been any different. And the bad news, or the good news, as however you might choose to look at it, is that it's not going to be any different.
Mm-hmm.
It is not going to be any different. Only we have a chance of being different.
Right. Yes, and I did say one more thing. I did do some brief recording and listening. It's been very hard to do anything but listen to all this crap. But and there is a part that's like recognizing that this race is a subject in this. I mean, this is hard stuff, and I am trying to. I am seeing compassion for the human who's trying to get out of that system and move forward in some way.
Yes, yes. And Monica, just an encouragement, again, not to stay focused on race. It is one of the issues. But the hatred knows no boundaries.
Yeah, that's true.
It doesn't. It's that's one place where it's big and it's obvious, and it again, it's always been there. Throw women into that category. Throw the poor into that category. Throw anybody with anything going on with them that makes them less than completely able to participate up to the standards of ego. You know, it's a huge group of people, right? The wrong religion, the wrong whatever it is that's going on, that group of people also gets thrown in. And the thing I think that's most critical for us to remember is that the people doing the throwing are doing it because they are living in such self-hatred.
Yeah, it's good to bring it back to hate versus love, fear versus love.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah, and I think, of course, really good to remember that if we make it a chart, there is love in all capital letters, and then underneath that is love and hate, and they're lowercase, because the lowercase is the dualistic world of conditioning, and that those capital letters contain it all. And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to get out of that dualistic hate versus love, love versus hate, which is conditional, and into the unconditional that can embrace it all.
Mm. Yeah, thank you for that.
We can't let ourselves fall for the con that hate is something real.
Mm. Yeah, that's huge.
It really is. And Monica, if it sounds like I'm presenting this as something easy, manageable, and that we'll all do by the time dinner is over this afternoon,
Yeah.
Now, the Buddha, you know, talks about it as lifetimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, thanks for that too.
Yeah. So distracted, yes. And the best that we can do, I think, is to use the tools we have. I choose unconditional love. I choose unconditional love. I choose unconditional love. I make that recording, that famous recording of I choose unconditional love. I give a 3 to 4 second pause of silence. And then I say again into the recorder, I choose unconditional love, that same little pause. I do that for like 20 minutes. And then when I listen to it, I hear myself saying, I choose unconditional love. And in that little pause, I say, I choose unconditional love. I hear it again. I say it again. I hear it again. I say it again. I hear it again. I say it again. And that's the world that I live in. And as we're doing that, so the of conditioned mind, of course, that keeps the light of love from being able to reach us. But in doing that process that I just described gives life all kinds of space in which to reach us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've done that. That is very helpful.
Yes, well, and we don't want it to be very helpful. It needs to be the world we live in.
Yes.
It's the world we live in until we are so, we have so changed our orientation that no matter where we are, that's what's going on inside our mind.
Mm-hmm.
And what that does, in addition to everything else, is show us the places that we are being called to make a difference. What part can we play?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah, and I still think if you have any influence, get that march to move earlier in January.
Why do you say that? I'm just curious.
Well, what is the point afterwards?
Yeah, well, I guess what is the point before? I mean,
well, the point before is a statement.
Yeah.
That's the difference. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not, you know, I'm not saying anything about it one way or the other. I just think it's a fascinating choice. It's kind of, you know, we need to wait for a really bad, and this is what people do. Okay, we need to make wait for enough bad traffic accidents to happen before we put up a stop sign there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's just interesting.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Well, take care of yourself, please. Make that recording, please. Make that recording, and don't stop listening to it for anything.
Yes, I
even
know,
if you're even if you're with other people, Monica, you can have one earbud in.
Exactly.
Just turn it down low and just have it playing. You'll still be able to attend to other people and do what is required, but that's what's there. It's like having somebody who loves you unconditionally singing a lullaby to you as you go through your day.
Yeah. That's a lovely image.
It is. And we can live there.
Thank you so much,
okay.
Sherry. Thank you, Ashwini.
You are so welcome.
Thanks, Monica. You know, Sherry, we have only a few minutes left. So if I might just try to summarize that.
Oh, please. Please, please, please.
You know, the thing that you started off saying is nothing has changed. And that greed, hate, and delusion have always existed. And the spiritual, and greed, hate, and delusion is not an external state. It's not an abstraction that's out there. It is all of us living in that place. And the worst thing that system can do is to blame us for the fact and then keep us in the bamboozle that it's out there, right? That we're against the greed, hate, and delusion, against inequality, against hatred, without which actually keeps each and every one of us from making the changes or transforming the orientation, which will cause us to live from the place of not greed, hate, and delusion, right? So the opportunity it's the Rumi quote. The opportunity is we all focus on working out our salvation diligently because it's the only place where we can make the difference. And if we're listening to that conversation about how the world is, we don't take responsibility for being how we want the world to be. And it's the most pernicious bamboozle there.
Yeah, beautifully stated. Beautifully stated. So if we're focused on what's wrong out there, we don't take responsibility for being the way we want the world to be.
And so the greed, hate, and delusion is our experience because that's where we're focused. And it is only when every single one of us is able to, in every moment, and get past that place where we go to, that is greed, hate, and delusion, that society will ever change. And the abstraction that it's anything else is really it's really the bamboozle of conditioning to keep that world alive.
Yes. Yes. And without producing guilt in anybody, you know, we make steps forward. It does seem like we do. We make steps forward into a kinder, more compassionate, more inclusive, more generous world. And then we all go to sleep.
Right.
And we slide back. And now here we are again, really upset that we have to do the work that we have to do. And I'll tell you, I know we're out of time, but I'll give people just one thing to consider as we all go about the day. I just described how to turn it around. Yes. I just gave very specific, simple, manageable instructions for how to turn it around. And I will bet you that not a single person will do it. I don't know how many people are on this call or how many people will listen to this call in the future, but I would be very surprised if a single person did that very simple exercise to turn their lives around. Now, somebody might make that recording, and they'll listen to it a couple of times during the day, and then it'll just slide back into, okay? And so when we look at what we're up against, that's what we're up against. There it is. It's not out there. It's not him. It's not them. It's not that. It's that system that exists inside of me that talks me out of doing what would enable me to be rid of it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Well, thank you, and happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to everybody. Take good care of yourselves and do that exercise, okay? All right. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.